come ashore?
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
Hello again, I am Mark Suddeth, and you have tuned in to Stories from the Hurricane Highway. This is Season 4, had to think about it, Episode 2. Yes, Season 4, Episode 2. Glad you could tune in here. We're going to talk about 2009 continuing now, early in the year, and when I started on Twitter. That's going to be one of the topics of discussion in this episode. I'm going to read you some of my early tweets. They're pretty funny, pretty boring, actually. And I'm also going to talk about the changes I wanted to make to Hurricane Track and especially premium services. In March of 2009, we were coming up on 10 years of HurricaneTrack.com's existence. So I did a lot of writing about that. We had blogs back then. I don't do the blog so much now anymore. It's video discussions and social media. It's kind of fragmented across the social media and weather universe, as we say, especially for hurricanes, of course. But back then, I wrote blogs, and I was going to be writing about the 10-year history of Hurricane Track. And then when we get into May, I went down to the Florida Governor's Hurricane Conference. I will discuss that, if I can say it, and this important phone call that I got from Jim Cantore while I was in Southeast Florida. My good friend and colleague Tim Millar funding that to help me come down there as I was trying to reinvent myself, my career, keep on going. I didn't want to give up. So I had a lot of changes I wanted to make. We'll talk about that. And, of course, the birth of Seabox, our chat. Yes, our chat that we had then, and we still have it now, and it is almost the exact same format all these years later. I'll talk about all of that and probably a few odds and ends here and there on this episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. All right, so we know my friend and colleague Paul Bowman. I met him over the internet in the early to mid-2000s. We became good friends. I finally met him in 06. Paul, amateur radio operator, all things tech. Real smart guy, real on top of things, helping me out with ideas, and just a all-around awesome dude. And he helped me out a lot in some of the early years of live streaming video. And again, he's just got his finger on the pulse of technology, social media, that kind of thing. And he was always on the lookout for something that could benefit HurricaneTrack.com and my whole enterprise. And he brought to me a couple of things in 2009. And one of those is Twitter. He asked me one day, hey, have you heard of Twitter? I don't remember if that was his exact words, but he mentioned it. And I was like, I think I might have heard something about it, but enlighten me. And he said, yeah, well, it's this way that you can, what they call tweet something or post something, but it's only a limited amount of characters. At the time, it was 140 characters. And it shows up on a website from your cell phone. Now, in 2009, I didn't have a smartphone. I had kind of a halfway between a dumb phone and a smartphone. But I didn't have an iPhone just yet. I had an Android version of an HTC, I think it was, phone. So kind of a smartphone, but it just wasn't as robust a smartphone as we know now, if that makes any sense at all. Certainly not an iPhone. I had very limited kind of that crossover between a flip phone, you know, that you just text with, so to speak, maybe takes a few pictures, short, crappy videos, and a smartphone. I think I was using some type of an Android. And I mean, I know, yes, that's technically a smartphone, but it was pretty archaic, especially compared to whatever version of the iPhone was out in 2009, probably the 2 at that point, I guess, the iPhone 2. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, so Paul introduced me to Twitter. That's what we need to focus on here. And just a real quick background, because this is interesting on Twitter, especially considering how timely this is. I'm recording this podcast in almost mid-December, the early to mid part of December of 2022, when one Elon Musk is the owner of Twitter. Like, he bought it. You guys know that. It used to be not that way. Twitter was created in 06. It started in March of 06. That's a long time ago. You think about that. You know, YouTube started on, I think, Valentine's Day it was, 05. Anyway, Jack Dorsey, this gentleman named Noah Glass, Biz Stone, what a name. These are Silicon Valley names, if I've ever heard them, right? And Evan Williams launched it in July of that year. They started it up. They created it in 06. They launched in July. Twitter Inc., based in San Francisco, and they had a bunch of offices around the world. And just 6 years later, they had 100 million users by 2012. And, you know, they'd posting 340 million tweets a day. They would use early on SMS messaging systems. I think it's called short messaging system or something like that. And you would post. You could go to the website, and I'm sure they had an app back then. I would be pretty confident. But you could also post to 40404, and it would pop up on Twitter once you had an account. And so Paul showed me. He said, go to this webpage. He had a website called hamcams.com. And it's about amateur radio and these different cams from amateur radio operators. It is exactly what it sounds like. And he owned and operated that website, and he could change whatever. And he put the little embed code in there. He had a Twitter account, PR Bowman, at PR Bowman was his. And he said, okay, look at this. I'm going to tweet something, 40404, and watch. It's just going to show up on this webpage. And he tweeted something. He said, what do you see? And I don't remember what it said. Maybe, hi, Mark, this is Paul, whatever. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. You did that from your phone? He said, yeah, watch this. I can do it again. And it changed dynamically. And I was like, oh, that could be really cool that I could be anywhere and just kind of tell you what I'm seeing, what I'm thinking, some new information I got. Through my cell phone, I could post it to that number through Twitter, and it would just show up on the webpage. Wow. It's funny. Back then, I was like, you're right. Yeah, whoa, that's a big deal. Now, my goodness, you can post world-changing video that can go viral in under 5 minutes. Maybe less than that, depending on who you are. If you're Musk, it could go viral in under 5 milliseconds. So, wow, how things have changed. So, yeah, early on, it was 140 characters. Eventually, it got doubled to 280, and we know that. But way back then, it was 140 characters, and again, you would do it. You could do it through the website, Twitter.com. But early on, it was that SMS messaging, you would do it through your phone. You know, that 40404. So I signed up and grabbed at Hurricane Track. I was like, woohoo! All right, you know, nobody had taken that yet. And looking back through everything, Mike Cornelius, one of our back-end producers and a good friend of our project, he helped me to kind of remember how to research this stuff. Unless I didn't do it right, and, you know, I'm not perfect, but I think that my first tweet might have been either the word hi or learning how to use Twitter. I'm trying to understand from looking at the different, just the way their archiving system works, exactly what my first tweet was. And it looks like Cornelius posted something on our back end on our Discord recently. But I think it was either the word hi or I'm learning how to use Twitter. I'm trying to see what he has here. He posted something, then I did a search. January 3rd, 2009, I show that I said hello. I'm just trying to get a timestamp on that, see if I can find that. I don't see it there. So it was either hello, like that's the first one, or learning how to use Twitter. They were both on January 3rd. But the point is, the birthday for me on Twitter was January 3rd, 2009. And I either said, hello, or learning how to use Twitter. So there you go. So a couple of, I'm going to read some of these because these are just like boring. But remember, I'm doing these through my phone. And I think it was an HTC Android type phone back then, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, I tweeted later on January 3rd at 8:34 p.m., going to Walmart in Tahoe, will have webcam on. That's so lame. Like, you know, who's seeing that? And I clicked on the engagements, and it only had a few, of course. You know, like nobody's following me to speak of back then. That's okay. So January 3rd, going to Walmart in Tahoe. Man, my life was just wow, right? That's just riveting, isn't it? Yeah, man. That was at 8:34. 9 minutes later, I guess Walmart, I must have gone to one that had gas pumps. And I said, this is just so sad. Wow. Sure is nice to fill up gas tank for under $30. Oh boy, if we could have that back again. Sure, that's the Tahoe too, right? Thing's got a 22-gallon gas tank. Oh man, my life. Whoo, boy. And then moving on along, let's see here. January 6th, and some of these may not be in chronological order. I finally kind of got with the program, and I posted a new article on Bay News 9's new radar. The Klystron 9 is now online at the HurricaneTrack.com homepage. And it's interesting because everything is in pretty much lowercase except the word new. It's got a capital N. There was some punctuation, commas, and a period, but I don't know why I didn't capitalize other stuff. And the reason I was writing something about Bay News 9 was my good friend Tracy Wilson, who is a television producer, worked at Bay News 9 back then. They're in Tampa. And she had introduced me to some people down there, and I did. I got some research done, and I wrote an article, apparently, about Bay News 9's awesome radar called Klystron 9. That was 5:33 p.m. on January 6, 2009. Kind of mundane, but at 5:24 p.m. on the 7th, got a nice sunset here after a very windy day. No period there, just whoosh, that's it. And by the way, none of these have any replies or retweets or hearts. So I guess they went almost into oblivion. But they're stored on the cloud. And here we are reading them, or I'm reading them to you. Moving on along. January 20th, some excitement. Here we go. Snowing steady here, out and about with webcam on. Now, I wonder what webcam that would have been in 2009. Certainly would have still been streaming through a video camera and Windows Media Encoder and streaming that way. And it would have just been, you know, or I would have had the webcam itself that sent a JPEG, but that's about it. And anybody on premium services back then could have seen the public or the stream if I'm streaming over Windows Media back then. I don't know what that means. It says out and about with webcam on. Webcam probably meant the actual Logitech or whatever webcam that I had that was sending a JPEG to the website every 5 minutes or so. Maybe it was down to 1 minute by 2009. Probably. Then, and by the way, that was, actually I'm out of, so that was at 10:22, but before that, at 9:23, we have moderate snow here now. And the kids are quite excited. Yes, and I was too. I'm a kid at heart. I love the snow. Now, moving on along. February 11th, I said, and I'm starting to tweet links and stuff. HurricaneTrack.com turns 10 in March, and I capitalized more stuff. I'm learning, right? Read about the history of the site beginning today on the homepage, and I put the link to HurricaneTrack.com there. Then on March 1st, big time storm for the East Coast and Deep South, making news headlines now. Here at HurricaneTrack.com headquarters, heavy rains with lightning! Exclamation point. Yep, that was at 1:39 p.m. on March the 1st. Kind of interesting. I also tweeted other things, just looking back through some of these. Back on January 9th that year, I did talk about on my commentary that I'll be looking at some new and updated plans for our premium services members. We are adding new features. And that'll bring me to my next segment here. As we talk about one of those new features, I'll tell you all about it. Chatbox, otherwise known as CBox. Okay, so Chatbox. Yeah, I knew that I wanted some way to interact with people on our premium services site in real time. And I know that there was IRC, Internet Relay Chat, or whatever it was called. There were different chat clients, programs, so forth. But once again, Paul came to the rescue. He told me all about a chat box or a chat program called Chatbox, or CBox for short, that his daughter was using, and it was really cool. He showed me a demonstration of it on a site that he had set up for his daughter, and it was really neat. I liked it. It was very intuitive. It wasn't overly complicated, and it looked like it would work. You could embed it in a web page. You can customize it. There were moderation tools available. If people started coming in there and posting stuff you didn't approve of or whatever, we could delete it, ban people, and so forth. You know, we rarely have ever had to do that, but that was important. But it looked like a viable solution to my idea here that I wanted the ability of real-time communication, because back in 08, one of the most remarkable things that I had ever done in the history of this live streaming era was during Ike, when we did... Mike Watkins and I did interactive Q&A while we were streaming live, but it was delayed because it was through email. I mean, gosh, it was like, okay, everybody, we're here in the eye. And in fact, it was during the eye. I guess I should have mentioned that. We had come down out of the San Luis Hotel, got in the Tahoe, drove it around to the front of the hotel out on Seawall Boulevard. Still in the parking lot, though, right in front of where it said San Luis Resort and Hotel or whatever it says. And the eye was, you know, passing right over Galveston. Huge, calm eye. And we were streaming live. We had audio, of course. And, you know, we had a few dozen people tuned in. And I encouraged people to send in questions through email, because we didn't have chat back then. And no way to really have us, you know, texting people like we do now. And so that's what we did. And so before I talk more about CBox, I want to play you that audio, because you can hear Mike and I talking to these people. This is several minutes long, but I think it's fascinating, and it really helps to demonstrate why I was so gung-ho on getting a real-time method of communicating with our supporters, our premium services supporters. And, I mean, this is just a great example of that. This is back at during the eye of Hurricane Ike, Q&A with Mark Suddeth and Mike Watkins in the eye of a hurricane from Galveston, Texas.
David wants to know what we think about the Harris County hunker down doctrine. If you hunker down in a home that's going to be safe in wind and not be destroyed in storm surge, and you prepare for a week of being self-sufficient, and you're in a home that you trust, it could it get damaged? Yes. But if you feel like you're not going to die in that home, then a hunker down policy is great. It makes you feel better. When it's over, you're already home, and you can do repairs temporarily, whatever. I think it's a good policy under the right conditions.
You know, I live in South Florida, where we don't have a choice to, you know, you can't evacuate to the north, because you get in your car in Miami and you drive to Orlando. Well, the hurricane could go to Orlando and then you're in your car. You know, there's just not enough time and space to get everybody out who'd want to get out. And so you evacuate in your community, and you as Max Mayfield, Florida National Hurricane Center, used to say all the time, you hide from the wind, you run from the storm surge. And so I think that's a good policy. It keeps people from being out on the road where they're going to be inherently more in danger than they would be inside a structure. And we don't want to see people caught out on the roads. And if you try to evacuate the entire city of Houston through a car or, you know, ground transportation, we don't have the lead times for that. You'd need about 5 days to clear Houston. And, you know, if you think about where Ike was 5 days ago, the forecast was anywhere from Pensacola to Mexico at that point in time. You just don't have the time. So, you know, and coastal residents would probably not tolerate getting moved out every 5 or 6 days during hurricane season. And in a busy season like this, in order to accommodate that evacuation, you'd almost have to do it that way. And that wouldn't be a good thing. Lots of other emails. We understand the stream is kind of sketchy at times. Not sure why. But hopefully you can hear us enough. Yeah, we're not sure what's going on, headlight in a distance for camera two.
There might be some press up there. There could be another chaser here.
3 hours till landfall.
Local official perhaps trying to get an eye on something, but we don't know.
I think they've turned their light off, or are we just too far up? Where did we start? We started further back, right?
Well, we moved up. We're about where we started.
Really? I can't see the waves as good. Well,
yeah, the light's not backlighting. Okay, we're getting some pretty good wind.
Todd asks if.
Okay, why is the stream up and down?
I heard you mention my question about the stream is currently in and out of commission.
Oh, about the waves. We think the wave heights are 25, 30 feet high. We think the Gulf itself is probably about 2 feet below the seawall right where we are right now.
Senator from Winter Haven, hello. We're trying to reposition ourselves up here.
Eric asks, maybe the light on Camtoon is the moon.
Maybe.
We're not seeing it where we are.
That would be incredible.
That would be incredible.
We may see the moon in the eye. I'm glad he mentioned that. I don't want to miss that. What is that, 49 miles per hour, 47? Yeah, the stream signal, the sprint signal has reduced a little bit. I hear you. Stan Goldenberg sent us an email.
Hey, Stan. You're awesome.
There's a light in the middle of camera two and power flashes in the background. Amazing. I can't wait to see that.
Well, obviously that is not the eye of Hurricane Ike that we were reporting from. Not yet. That was the eye wall that was coming over, the western eye wall. We did go out in the eye, I do remember, and I think we did another Q&A during the eye itself, but you know, the point is, it was cumbersome. It was difficult to try to answer questions from people. They would pile up those emails. There was a delay. You know, we might ask, hey, you got any questions about anything? Send them on in. And this was exclusive to our supporters there on premium services during 08. We had, you know, a couple hundred people that had signed up during Ike. A few dozen of those people were up very late at night. The eye of Ike was moving over very late, I think 12 midnight, you know, 1 a.m., something like that, maybe later. And so people were up, you know, Todd was up, Barbara, Martha, Deborah, other people from around the country, you know, were emailing us with questions. And it was just, you know, it worked, but there had to be a better way. And so that leads me back to what I was talking about, that there was a better way. And Paul introduced us to one of those ways. And that was CBox, the chat box. And it was really, really neat. We could integrate it into the website. I would pay $24 a year to have access to the premium part of chat box that gave me moderator controls. I could do whatever I needed to do to make sure everybody behaved themselves. And 99% of the time they do. They did then. They still do now. We could archive the messages. I mean, it was just a really neat thing, and it was needed. It really was. That way we could get on and just chat back and forth. Now, look, chat was not new. That had been around for years, and there's different versions of it, even in 09, and I realized that, but there was something about CBox that really appealed to me. I really liked it. Very simple to use, simple to integrate. It worked, and it didn't cost very much. You know, like I said, $24 for the year, and it's still that same price. I don't know, like, if it's just a server and nobody's even alive anymore to monitor it. Who knows, right? But the PayPal keeps billing me every quarter. And, of course, there's four quarters, right? And so every quarter I get billed, and it's still $24 a year. Pretty remarkable. So that was Chatbox. And we had it then, still have it now. Huge thanks to Paul Bowman for introducing that to me. Really, really neat. Eventually, we went on to create different versions. I would add a couple more accounts, and I think we have two now, so I guess I pay $48 a year. There's the chat box link, where you're just supposed to put links to stuff and not really chat about them, and then there's just the regular chat, where people can come in and, hey, what's going on, or whatever. And then eventually at some point, I don't remember what year it was, but I introduced sort of a private different room for off-topic stuff. And even Chatbox became cumbersome. I don't want to say obsolete, but there was better. But that's way in the future, way in the future. A little hint, we call that Discord. And that's what we use now, in addition to the very long-lived and venerable Chatbox. So as we move through the springtime there of 09, not much was going on in my life. I didn't have any Lowe's events to get ready for, you know, because I didn't have them as a partner any longer. I got my equipment ready, you know, worked on some ideas of just getting everything ready for the hurricane season, which was, you know, every season we always anticipate, you know, wanting to be as ready as we can be, whatever the year. And 09 was no exception. And we get into the spring there, and I've mentioned this a couple times already, and I want to go ahead and get to it, because it was really important. It was this Florida Governor's Hurricane Conference, held every year down in, I guess it's Broward County, and the Fort Lauderdale area. A pretty important conference for the many, many, many Florida counties, different emergency managers, responders, people in business and industry, you know, relief efforts, the Weather Service, National Hurricane Center, universities, you name it, they all would get together at this pretty prestigious conference. It was called the Florida Governor's Hurricane Conference, and whoever the governor was at the time would come down and speak, open the conference. There would be speakers and presentations and breakout sessions, you know, conference stuff that's been going on for decades, I'm sure. But it was about hurricanes. Now, there was also the National Hurricane Conference. I don't remember where it was in 09. Didn't matter. I couldn't go to it. But I did get to go to the Florida Governor's Hurricane Conference thanks to Tim Millar. So he funded the Tahoe being on exhibit inside the exhibit hall. Cost a couple grand or whatever. And he was advertising and also showcasing CRG, the Cyclone Research Group. That was his nonprofit business and project. And again, as a goodwill thing and just a great friend and colleague, he supported what I was trying to do here by holding on, you know, and not giving up and so forth, keeping me in the game, keeping me out there, you know, so people didn't say, hey, where's Mark? Where's his hurricane track? Are they gone? You know, what's up? He funded it. And so I drove down and, I stayed with Tim, at his, I think he had a house at the time, if memory serves. He might've still had an apartment, doesn't matter, But he let me stay with him, so I had, you know, accommodations. It was just, it was great. It was just such a wonderful thing to have people that cared about me and what I was trying to do. And it really, really warmed my heart. It kept me motivated. It kept me going. And you remember, I had All Roads Sat as the sponsor there in 09, sending me $1,000 a month, you know, keeping me at least somewhat in the game, so to speak, of being able to pay my bills. My wife had to work overtime probably a lot. And it was rough trying to start over. It really was. And I cannot, you know, emphasize that part enough. It was a struggle. And I was very determined to hang on and get through this rough patch financially, as millions of Americans were going through the same thing. They really were. So that at least there was, you know, misery loves company, as they say. But this one gesture that Millar did for me really, really meant a lot. So there I was. I had put the Tahoe in the convention center. There's a whole process you go through to do that. And I had done that. He had done that. And Tim had these Jeeps, I guess Cherokees or something like that, right? And I think he had a couple of them at that point in time, a red one and a blue one, something like that. And so I'd put the Tahoe in. He put one of his Jeeps in. And by the way, his Jeeps were outfitted very similar to the Tahoe back in the day, with an anemometer and stuff fed inside. He could read it on the dashboard. He would study and observe and report on cyclones, you know, as a general term, tropical cyclones in particular. He would be able to drive down to the Yucatan if needed, you know, positioning vehicles ahead of time. He had all that nonprofit funding coming in from philanthropy and people helping out and so forth. So he was well-funded and ready to go whenever he needed to, even going out into the plains, working with different storm chasers and even some of his colleagues from up north. George Karunas and Mark Robinson from Canada. And they would come down, or as they say, they would come, see if I can do this, down from Canada, and they'd help out. I can't do the Canadian thing. I'm trying. So Tim was just well-liked by a lot of people. Good guy. There we were. We're all set up. So he gave me his other Jeep to use to tool around town, because Tim worked. He worked as a pilot. He would do banner planes and cargo stuff, very small cargo runs, maybe to the Bahamas, sometimes down to Haiti or the Dominican Republic. So he was working, doing that, and he was working on running the Cyclone Research Group. So I had a vehicle and his other Jeep, and I'd be able to drive it around town and, you know, go get myself some Boston Market or Steak and Shake or something. And I had to put some gas in it, right? And so this is that phone call that I was telling you about, all right? So it's like May of 09, and I don't remember where I was exactly. That'd be pretty cool, but it's on one of those big boulevards there in Southeast Florida. I pulled into a gas station, and I put gas in the Jeep there, 10, 20, 25 bucks, whatever. And the phone rings, and I answered it, and it was Jim Cantore. And, he was like, "Hey, Mark, Cantore here. How are you?" I was like, "I'm doing great. I'm down in Florida at the conference, etc." He's like, "Oh, that's wonderful." I said, "Listen," and this was really, really big. He said, "I've been talking about you. You know how NBC, Universal, and some other partners bought the Weather Channel last year?" Yep, I'm familiar with that, I told him. He said, "Well, you know, we want to get you in. I've been talking to some producers from NBC, and we got to get you in. This is the chance here. They're very excited about you. I think we can do something. You know, I can't make any guarantees, and it's not my decision, but I've got some doors open." And he named a couple of names of people. I don't remember who they were. I think one was from LA, and he's talking from somebody to somebody from New York. And, you know, he said, "Look, we got to get you up to Atlanta, you know, whenever we can. And let's try to integrate you into the Weather Channel. What you're doing with these remote cams, your weather station stuff, you know, I think that would be great for on-air programming." That's what his point was. And I mean, that was amazing to have the Jim Cantore call me and sort of pitch that. And he would help me set up that meeting because, you know, He's Jim Cantore, right? He can make meetings happen. He could at least get me in the door. So that's where we kind of left off there in May. I did the conference there, just exhibiting. I probably went to a couple of classes as well. Definitely talked to a lot of people in that big exhibit hall. Millar did the same thing, just, you know, chin wagging with folks. Hey, what's this Tahoe do? What's all this stuff on there? And, you know, stories to tell people. We were in Charlie, we were in Ike last year. And, you know, also talking about All Road Set, that they're the new partner with us. I mean, that was really fun to be able to do too. And I was proud of that, you know, from what Chris, the gentleman from San Diego, did. And I was very proud to be able to mention, yeah, and hand out brochures and business cards or whatever from All Road Sat. You know, they could provide some satellite communications to some people if they needed it, right? And so it was just a really good time. You know, it was, I was back. I felt like there was definitely some hope here. Premium Services was doing okay. You know, I had, I don't know, a couple hundred people that had hung on. I mean, it was not a monthly thing. And again, that was, I think, a big mistake of mine, is it was an annual thing. It was like $24.95 for the year. And, you know, all that was came in September. And that was it. You know, you need recurring payments. That's one of the things I have learned over the years. And that's why Patreon has been so helpful here. And I wasn't with it back then. I didn't know. I was trying to be, you know, not begging for money, as they say. I hate that. I do. But so anyway, people, you know, we still had a good couple hundred people, and they would email, they were getting on the chat box, and, you know, things looked pretty good that we would enter the 09 season ready as could be. And I still had, this partnership, you know, with CNN, even though they had passed on signing something really big with me. I talked about that in season 3 there as we kind of concluded things. I did make a pitch and they passed. You know, the economy was bad and just, we all know about that. But the bottom line was, look, I got this call and this sort of open invitation. It would take time, he said, you know, Jim, you know, they're still solidifying things and, you know, it's a big network, the Weather Channel, and NBC is involved. And, you know, so it's not going to happen fast, but he said, sometime soon, it's May, you know, when June's coming and start of hurricane season, let's get you to Atlanta and try to make something happen. And that is where I will leave off with this episode. There was that potential waiting as we were going to begin the 2009 Atlantic hurricane season. Maybe, just maybe, there was something really big waiting for me and the Hurricane Track project, the Hurricane Landfall project, all of that in the future, thanks to none other than Jim Cantore. So next episode, we'll get into the summer of 09. We'll talk a little bit about what the seasonal prediction was for 2009. I'll go back and read some of that from Colorado State University and Dr. Bill Gray. He was still alive back in the day. And yeah, we'll set the stage for what we were anticipating for 09. Mike Watkins was going to be helping out that year as needed. Jesse Bass, of course, as well. And then, too, working a little bit with Tim Millar and the Cyclone Research Group, if the opportunity presented itself. And so it was a reawakening. It really was. That I think that's a good title for this episode as we wrap it up here. The reawakening of Hurricane Track that was progressing there as we got into the first parts. Really the first half almost of 2009, at least the first 5 months there through May. So there you have it. Listen, I say it every time I try to wrap these episodes up. I thank you very much for listening. I thank you for your feedback. And, you know, all these years later, we have Patreon, and that has helped me to do so, so much. I mean, really, what a community we've got here. And, you know, look, C-Box still there. We got Discord now. Wow, we've really done a lot together, and that's that word there, together. Crowdfunding, the crowd part is so important, and I'm glad you're on the other end listening to me and listening to my stories here. I do appreciate it very, very much. All right, that is it for now. I, of course, am Mark Sutter. This has been Stories from the Hurricane Highway. We'll do it again in about a week.